We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The temperature's rising, it isn't surprising. She certainly can. She started a heat wave by letting us heat wave. And in such a way...
Although young people may not recognize Ethel Waters' name, she was perhaps the best-known black woman in the U.S. between 1920 and 1940. A popular and sultry nightclub performer and best-selling recording artist, and as an actress, someone who broke the color barrier when she appeared alongside whites in Broadway shows and Hollywood movies. We're listening to her recording of Heat Wave, which is also the title of Dahl Bogle's new biography of the singer-actress, and it's just out from Harper. I'm very pleased that it brings Donald Bogle back to our show. Hi, Donald.
Hi, Lenny. My pleasure.
Several reviewers, including the Washington Post's Will Haygood, said that Ethel Waters' career has long demanded the kind of major assessment you've given it here. Why do you think she isn't better appreciated now?
Well, it's interesting, Lenny, that one thing about her, which a number of people don't realize, is that she was once young. Many people who are aware of Ethel Waters think of her only as an old woman, and they think of her as performing with the Billy Graham Crusades, which was late in her career. But she was young once, and she was a hot number. She was a terrific singer, dancer, actress. And so I think that's part of the problem. And I also think part of her politics later may have, sort of people didn't feel as close to her as they probably would have otherwise.
Well, she when she was young, she was far from the woman who wound up as an evangelical Christian on the Billy Graham Crusade. Some people may remember her also for playing Beulah, which was seen as a kind of stereotypical black maid show on television in the 1950s. And you say then her politics, she didn't really go along with things in the civil rights movement?
Yeah, she was, Ethel was getting older. I think that she was sort of at loose ends. Ethel had made a movie in 1949, Pinky. And in that movie, she was nominated for the Academy Award as Best Supporting Actress of the Year. And it was the first time an African-American woman had been nominated for that Oscar since Hattie McDaniel had won in 1939. And one of the things that happened was that Walter White, the executive secretary of the NAACP, was critical of Pinky and said there were stereotypes in the movie. He was not critical of her performance. And then Beulah, which you've mentioned, people felt that Beulah coming on in 1950, that it had old images. She was this nurturing maid for a white family. So Ethel, with the criticism, and she didn't really like criticism. And so I think that this just sort of alienated her from the NAACP and the idea that times were changing.
Well, it isn't that she just didn't like criticism. She was a difficult person, wasn't she?
She was extremely difficult.
So she probably alienated all sorts of people who might have come to her aid
otherwise.
Well,
that was another thing. That was another thing about Ethel, why there weren't people to sort of carry the torch on after she had died, because she was very, very difficult with just about everybody, but particularly younger women who were performing. She was very hard on Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday said she lost an important booking because of Ethel Waters. She was hard on Lena Horne, people who had really been influenced by Ethel.
Well, in both cases, it's because she felt she should have gotten credit for the song that the others were doing. In the case of Billie Holiday, she was doing an audition when she was really poor. You tell the story of her taking a week of her mother's salary to buy a new dress, shoes, and a bus ticket from New York for an audition. And then she comes into this Philadelphia theater and starts singing Underneath the Harlem Moon. And
suddenly
that was Ethel's song.
Yeah, and Ethel appears out of nowhere, and she wants that B off the stage. And Billie Holiday lost the booking. You know, the other one.
Did they ever reconcile? Because Billie became a big star.
Billie was trapped
in Philadelphia for a while because she didn't have the money. In the case of Lena Horne, she sang Stormy Weather, became associated with it, but it had been Ethel's song.
Ethel's song. But the main thing that happened with Lena Horne was that Ethel and Lena Horne worked together in Cabin in the Sky, the film that was released in 1943. And at that point, Ethel was really trying to establish herself in Hollywood. And she does have the lead role in the film. And Ethel was older. She was in her 40s. Lena was young. She was slender. Ethel had gained weight and was very conscious of it.
And Lena Horne was one of the most beautiful women in the world.
Yes. And Ethel felt very threatened by Lena Horne. And they have a big sequence together late in the film. And everyone I talked to who worked on Cabin in the Sky remembered how difficult and mean she was to Lena Horne. And after this explosion on the set, even Vincent Minnelli, the director, could not control Ethel. After the explosion, Lena Horne said they never talked again. And Ethel herself, with Cabin in the Sky, because of these difficulties, she said that she ended up being blacklisted from films. She didn't do another movie till Pinky in 49.
Do you think that part of her problem is because of the circumstances of her birth?
This is the thing, that Ethel, Ethel's mother was a teenager who was raped.
She was just 13 when
yes,
she had her.
That's right. And she was raped. And Ethel, this always, for the mother, she just could not accept Ethel. This was just a sign of shame for her. It was a stigma. And Ethel growing up, she was born in Chester, Pennsylvania. Actually, she was born in 1896. I mean, going back to the end of the 19th century. And growing up in Chester and in Philadelphia, which was nearby, Ethel felt completely or almost completely unloved. The only person who really showed affection for her and warmth was her grandmother, her maternal grandmother, Sally Anderson. And her grandmother died when Ethel was still a teenager. Ethel herself had an early teenage marriage that didn't last long. And so Ethel went through life. Many people said that she had a chip on her shoulder. She was always ready for a fight because she had to fight as a girl for everything that she got. And I'll tell you, Lenny, the remarkable thing about Ethel is that she did not have much of a formal education. And the prospects for her in Philadelphia, I mean, her ambition at one point was to be a maid for a wealthy white woman who might travel. I mean, that's what she saw for herself. But she had this voice. And once she started to really sing and once she got into this career, then that gave her, it really gave her life meaning. It gave it definition.
Well, how did she become a performer?
It was almost a fluke. It was one night. Ethel was actually born on October 31st, Halloween, and she was performing at a local club in Philadelphia, sort of amateur night, and people got up and sang. And when Ethel sang, that place just stopped. And there were two vaudeville figures, black vaudeville figures, who booked acts, and they told Ethel they wanted her to come to Baltimore, and that's how it started.
Well, she was already 24 when Mamie Smith had her first big hit with Crazy Blues, which really opened up the recording industry to women singers. Then Ma Rainey came along and Bessie
yes.
Smith. Was Ethel singing blues at the time?
Yes. I mean, a lot of jazz critics, I mean, purists don't see her really as quite a blues singer.
Although she recorded with a lot of good jazz
yes,
musicians.
Yes, she did.
Years.
She did. And she, Fletcher Henderson was her pianist in the beginning, and she clashed with him. But he always had this respect for her. But Ethel starts to record early, and she records with Black Swan, a black record label. They sent her on a tour, and it was, I mean, success as a recording star came very, very quickly to her. And the audiences seeing her live, they were really just mesmerized by this woman who could get up there. And she not only sang on that tour, but she also could do little comedy routines. And she also could dance. She was a terrific dancer. You can see some of it in Cabin in the Sky, in that sequence with Lena Horne, even though Ethel is heavier there, she can still do those leg lifts, kick them up. And so nonetheless, she starts to record in the 1920s, and then she goes through the black club theater circuit for years. And then in the 1930s, this is when actually she appears at the Cotton Club in 1933, and she sings Stormy Weather. And when she sings Stormy Weather, and the Cotton Club was the club for African-American entertainers. I mean, that was top of the line to get there.
She introduced Stormy Weather?
She introduces it at the club. I mean, Stormy Weather, actually, there had been an earlier sort of recording of it, but this, it became Ethel's song. And Ethel, when she sang it, I mean, everyone just stopped on it because Ethel really was telling the story in a sense of not only a love gone wrong, but in some ways a life gone wrong. And Irving Berlin heard her. And that's when Berlin wanted her for his new show. It was As Thousands Cheer. And Ethel was signed. And the thing about it, Clifton Webb was in it. Marilyn Miller was in it. Helen Broderick.
This was the first integrated
It was
Broadway
an inter-
show,
was it? It was, yes, it was an integrated review. I mean, there had been other cases, but not like this. This was the big deal. But Lenny, when she did it, now she was already known and established, but they would not put her name above the title, up there with Clifton Webb and the others. There's a picture in the book of the poster for it. And Ethel, Berlin gave her great songs, Heatwave, and also Supper Time. And Supper Time really was very important socially and racially in terms of popular theater, because it was a sequence where a woman is preparing dinner and she knows her husband is not coming home, that he's been lynched. And the lyrics themselves are not explicit in that way, but the context in which the song was presented in the show. And many people felt again that she walked away with that show.
Well, you said her name wasn't listed with the others above the title, but she was one of the highest paid performers.
That's right.
At the time, black or white. Did it really bother her? Because you say she had ambivalent feelings about race and racism.
She did have,
she didn't trust white people.
She did not trust. She really didn't trust whites. I mean, Lenny, she had experienced the most blatant kind of racism in her travels. I mean, and when she was doing performing through the South and even other parts of the country, I mean, the back doors, the use of the N-word, all sorts of things. And with As Thousands Cheer, Ethel felt really that her name should have been above that title.
So why did she distance herself from the civil rights movement in the 1960s?
Well, again, her world was changing, and Ethel later became, in a sense, she was politically more conservative. She didn't understand, in a way, these new social movements. And because she had been criticized, again, with Pinky and some of her other roles, she really felt that the NAACP should not criticize her. She felt other African Americans should support her. But the criticism really wasn't so much of Ethel. It was of these roles. And other people were criticized. Paul Robeson, who worked in a movie with Ethel called Tales of Manhattan in the early 1940s. That film was picketed. African Americans didn't like the images, but they did like the performers. But Ethel didn't see it that way.
Well, she was somebody who had all sorts of fights that perhaps some of them were secret. People didn't know that she was bisexual and mostly lesbian. She was able to keep that out of the newspapers.
Well, she was. You know, her sexuality, she told a friend of hers in Los Angeles, a woman I interviewed for the book who was much younger than Ethel and who knew Ethel later in life. And they were just friends. It was a platonic relationship. But she said Ethel was very upfront and said that she was a lesbian, and she said she was the best at it. But Ethel also had very serious relationships with men. I mean, she sort of went back and forth. And she the thing is that, again, later in her life, she often talked about a man who meant a lot to her, the man in her life, who she called Pretty Eddie, and who there were two Eddies in her life, but I'm pretty sure it was Eddie Mallory, the musician, who Ethel lived with for a time. You know, the other thing about Ethel, which I found very funny when I was researching the book, Ethel had this early teenage marriage, and then that was over. And then the black press, or the Negro press, as it was known at that time, in the 20s and 30s, was often talking about Ethel and her husband, Earl Dancer, a black producer who's important, was referred to as her husband. And Ethel was living with him, but, you know, living in sin, and she just let people think they were married. We search for marriage records and so forth, and I know that she did not marry Eddie Mallory, who she lived with for some time. So she just, you know, put it out there that these were sort of her husbands, but indeed it appears they were not.
You can see a magnificent performance by her in A Member of the Wedding, which she performed on Broadway and then later in the film with the young Julie Harris. She was a pretty good actress as well. I read on Wikipedia that she had been approved for a star on Hollywood Boulevard, but that it hasn't been installed because of a lack of funds?
Yeah, that's probably the case.
Okay. How expensive are they?
They can be expensive, and there has to be real support for it. You know, I remember with Dorothy Dandridge, who I did a biography on previously. And with Dandridge also, that was the problem for a long time, that they had to get the money to put that star on the boulevard for her. So Ethel, I thought that Ethel's was just about to happen, but it's not. But one thing you mentioned, Member of the Wedding, is, you know, that when Ethel did that play, she didn't want to do it in the beginning. She really didn't. She felt there was no God in the play.
Now, she had become religious by this time.
She was always religious. But as someone who worked with her said, you know, yes, she always carried the Bible, but she put the Bible down, cuss you out, and then go back and pick the Bible back up. I mean, she had a very personal sense of God, that God, whatever she did, God would understand. But she did want changes in Member of the Wedding, and they wanted her enough that some changes were made for her.
Donald Bogle's biography of Ethel Waters is called Heat Wave, The Life and Career of Ethel Waters. It is published by Harper. And let's go out with one of her hit songs, Am I Blue? Thank you so much, Donald.
Thank you, Lenny.
I found he was gone. How could he do it? Why should he do it? He never done it before. Am I blue? Am I blue?